In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
One day, I was walking along and suddenly had a mental lapse and thought for a moment I was a far-left Democrat. So I found a hammer, there weren't any sickles lying around, and started denting the fenders of cars and trucks. Not every fender, because that would look suspicious. But pretty soon, the government called it a crisis. And so I opened a fender repair shop to help deal with the crisis. Thanks to my Democrat representative, I got a massive funding grant that allowed me to hire organizers who dented more fenders when cars stopped denting themselves. That way, I'd keep getting public money to do a public service. And because of their generosity, I wanted to help keep the politicians who gave me money in office, so I gave them money back and let my trained workers volunteer for their campaigns. And when they got reelected, gosh, taxpayer dollars just kept coming in. Of course, I'm not a far-left Democrat and obviously didn't really have a mental lapse. It would take an awful lot of hammer blows to my own forehead fender before that happened. But that little scenario isn't too far off from how environmentalists operate. There's an actual crisis that never gets solved no matter how much money is thrown at it, or there's a man-made crisis that they invent and call a crisis, like global warming. Global warming is entirely made up. How do you know? Because actual scientists know that it was warmer during the medieval times than it is right now. Where were the medieval power plants spewing CO2 into the atmosphere? It was warmer in Roman times than it is now. Did their chariots run on diesel? Climate change is not your enemy. Democrats are. Remember, environmentalists think that mankind is the problem. If that's your moral and mental starting point, what does it matter if you destroy some lives if, in the bigger picture, you believe you're saving the earth? Individuals and families don't matter, only the earth matters. Or in the case of the Klamath and California, fish matter more than people. The left are exceptional manipulators to make you believe their fiction, but the problem they always run into is reality. Like when the globe stopped warming, it became climate change. And that's the real issue. There are solutions. So why aren't we doing them? Dr. Bob Zybak holds a PhD in environmental sciences from OSU. His dissertation was The Great Fires, Indian Burning and Catastrophic Forest Fire Patterns of the Oregon Coast Range, 1491 to 1951, and he is our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber and forest fires. Dr. Bob, thanks for joining us today. It's good to talk to you again.
Well, good talking to you, Mark. I look forward to the discussion.
Yeah, and we're being told that what is happening down in the Klamath and across the Pacific Northwest is there's this historic drought brought on by climate change. First of all, is it historic? And second, is it caused by climate change?
The first answer is it's historical in that it's taking place, but it doesn't compare to the 1930s or other periods of time. So it's kind of a bad drought that's in that area, and that certainly contributes to the flammability of all the fuels. But to blame it on climate change is to say that you don't know what you're talking about. Climate's a rolling average, usually about 30 years in a row, and these single events or even clustered events for a few months or a few years are just weather. That always has been. You can read the Bible and see that these types of events occur naturally, and the climate is always changing, but these events are weather events, they're not climate events.
So in terms of this being historical, that it is in fact a dry year, no doubt about that, but does it have to be so damaging that we've never had a bad drought before, so we just don't know what to do and therefore don't do anything to combat the problem? I mean, is that how we should be handling this, do nothing?
We're pretty adaptable. Adaptive species. It seems ridiculous that we'd be doing nothing, but it also seems even more ridiculous we'd be running around trying to put out carbon taxes or get people to change light bulbs and somehow affect the weather and ultimately the climate. So it's not a matter of not doing anything. It's a matter of doing a lot of the wrong things, whereas the history's clear. Droughts happen. They sometimes extensive periods of time, and it can affect local populations. People have to migrate or adapt otherwise. So they're just selling a popular political agenda that this is climate change, and now you need to elect me and pay more taxes or something.
So to be clear, you're saying that a carbon tax won't put out wildfires?
Carbon tax has nothing to do with wildfires or the climate or anything else. It's just a strict political move to gather more taxes.
Yep.
So that's based on my experience and observation. There's nothing to do with what they claim is going to happen, other than money will go from the public to their hands.
Well, as you mentioned there, environmentalists like to blame man-made climate change or man-made CO2 for climate change. We know that's not true because CO2 doesn't nearly have the warming capacity that they want to claim it does. Plus, mankind only puts out around something like 3% of global CO2. How much CO2 is released in the atmosphere when a catastrophic wildfire like the Bootleg Fire is allowed to get out of control by not dealing with it early and become a massive forest fire like what we see now?
Well, it's a large amount. It varies from fire to fire, but the idea that you can lock up carbon in a forest and create 400-year-old trees that have happy spotted owls flitting about is just nuts. They've been selling that racket for about 30 years. A lot of people have profited from it, but it's got nothing to do with carbon dioxide.
Hmm. Well, it just seems
to me. In my opinion.
Sure. It seems to me by not doing something to prevent fire and releasing all that carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, it seems to me that in itself is kind of man-made CO2. So Governor Brown was on Face the Nation a few weeks back and said that the massive fires devastating the West Coast are a result of, quote, decades of mismanagement of our forests. Do you think she means actual forest management, or does she have something else in mind?
I think it's mismanagement of our federal forests in particular. These fires are starting on the federal lands. The federal lands are where you have wilderness and streamside buffers and roadless areas, and you have a critical habitat. And so my question always is, and I can't get a straight answer, how many critical habitat designations, how many miles of streamside buffers, how much roadless area fueled this fire? So these fuels are building up and they're burning up. That's all been scientifically predicted for decades. It's got zero to do with the climate. It's got everything to do with gross mismanagement of our public forests.
Yep.
And the results are everywhere you look.
Yep.
There's fires, smoke, and you can put the dates on them.
Yep, exactly. You can't keep dumping piles of matchsticks in the forest and then be surprised when a spark sets it off. Although I was encouraged to hear her saying that the first step to recovery is usually admitting that there's a problem. We're going to talk more about that later. Coming up, we'll be talking about fire prevention and management with Dr. Bob Zybak. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Dr. Bob Zybak. He is our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber and even forest fires. And we're talking today with him about the wildfires that are a never-ending story here in Oregon because people like to use it as an issue rather than actually solve the problem. And Dr. Bob, the rabid environmentalists have staked out this position that mankind is a scourge on the earth and that nature is pure and holy. And because of that, we shouldn't touch forests. We shouldn't manage them. And that when there's a wildfire, we should just let them burn out. I'm curious, though, who did they think put out wildfires before mankind came along? Wouldn't that have led to some pretty catastrophic wildfires that destroyed forests?
Well, most of the catastrophic wildfires are started by people. So you need fire starters. So that means prior to people, you were limited to areas of volcanic activity for the most part, and lightning strikes. And so it would depend on the types of fuels that were growing. It would depend on the number of lightning strikes in a given year or a given time, and those types of things. So it would be more of a predictable type of circumstance, but we can only speculate how great or how much lesser fires were at that time. We've created these massive fuel buildups, and we make fire every day. So it's a
pretty much a man-caused problem at this point. And if we can speculate that similar events happened in the past, it would be pretty much irrelevant.
Well, they seem to hear them talk, they seem to have this notion that before mankind came along and ruined everything, that there was just this one massive pristine forest from the edge of the Great Plains right across the mountains and only stopping at the ocean. Is that view even remotely grounded in reality?
No. It's people fantasizing a past that, as you say, humans are pathogens. So to them, to those few, they see an environment without people and letting nature take her or his course as somehow a wonderful thing and something that can be engineered today's environment. Today, that we should be able to create these areas of so-called natural balance, and we can't.
So, in other words, it was really mankind that has created these huge forests, because we put out the fires, and we've wanted them to grow because we wanted the timber and whatnot. And before then, it sounds like these wildfires, you know, these naturally caused wildfires would have just burned until they burned out naturally. And so you wouldn't have these massive expansive forests. Is that, in essence, what you're saying?
Well, no, I'm saying we can speculate about what the forest fire conditions were like before people, but they would have been more isolated because they would have depended on a source of ignition, and people are everywhere. We're using power, we're lighting cigarettes, we're having lawnmowers backfire. So every day, everybody that's a human is responsible for fire. And so you got fire everywhere. Whereas prior to humans, you're limited to lightning and volcanic areas, and whether they have fuels on them or not, whether they have periodic fires or not is just pure speculation.
Hmm. Well, in terms of what's going on right now with the bootleg fire, what were the conditions like in that forest before this set off? Was that area being properly managed, or were they the typical hands-off approach?
That's going to be very, very interesting to look at. A good portion of it, I think, Sycan Marsh area was being actively managed. And a lot of that management thought, I think, I don't have all the facts, but I think they were using prescribed burning. They were certainly using thinning. They were using road access. So as that fire ends, it will be very interesting to see how the different fuels responded. A similar situation with the Labor Day fires last year. A lot of the private lands that were plantations or pre-commercial thinnings or commercial thinnings, and they burnt right up too under really atypical wind and fire conditions. So we should be able to revisit those lands and see if there are management approaches that are effective.
Well, who would investigate that, and what kind of information are they going to end up delivering on that?
Well, you know, almost everybody should investigate it, and almost nobody does. they have the environmentalists saying, they took out all that carbon, and now the rest of it's burnt, and the other carbon's rotting, and so active management is making a drought or something. Their line of reasoning is variable. But you've got other people saying, if we're using these materials and using the forests effectively and managing appropriately, we can make the fire drop to the ground so it's not crowning. A crown fire is what kills everything. A ground fire quite often cleans things up. It kills a few trees, but it leaves a more scattered stand. So ground fires may have been more common prior to human tree farming, but again, that's speculation. There are many things that can be done, but ready access, regular maintenance. We went 30-some years and had one major fire when we had people actively managing our forests in Western Oregon. So now we have several a year, and it was predictable, and it started in 1987. We've got a date that it started happening, and it's almost entirely isolated to federal lands.
You kind of touched on it just now, but if you could clarify a little bit, in the areas that probably were not so well managed, what kinds of fire prevention strategies are out there that should have been in place?
prescribed fire, logging, road building, active management, and aesthetically better and with less damage to the environment than may have been done 50 years ago when we yarded trees right down creeks and that. But a lot of environmental stuff has been counterproductive. A lot of these fuel loads are a predictable result. And then with the fuel loads, we have the predictable fires.
Okay, let's go and take a break there. We'll have more with Dr. Bob Zybak. After hundreds of thousands of acres of forest lost and thousands of homes burned up, could the Democrats finally be seeing the light, or is it all just smoke signals? Stay with us. Dr. Bob Zybak holds a PhD in environmental sciences from OSU, and he is also our longtime consultant for issues of forestry and timber and on forest fires. And Dr. Bob, have you ever driven through a neighborhood where you see these pristine, healthy lawns, and then you come across an abandoned home where nature has taken over lawn care? How does that usually look?
That's a good analogy for our forest. The well-cared home or forest looks pretty safe and inviting and attractive, and the abandoned home looks like a pile of weeds, a piece of crap ready to burn. So it's aesthetics is a huge part of it, but risk of fire is another obvious part of it.
Yes, absolutely. And you saw right through that, because I'm asking you that because for decades, environmentalists have taken the position that we shouldn't touch the forest or even fight fires until they're so out of control or threatening homes and lives. And reading some articles that are out there, though, I was a little surprised because it almost sounds like the Democrats may have finally gotten the message that you do, in fact, have to take care of the forest if you don't want them to explode at the first spark. And in an article about Southwest Oregon communities teaching homeowners, I think this was through the Statesman Journal, if I remember right, but we'll post that up on iSpyRadio.com once we find it again. There are now organizations pushing wildfire-resistant building codes. And quoting from the article here, homeowners get expert advice and checkups for creating defensible space around homes. Key elements include removing dead plants and weeds 30 feet from around your home and removing dead or dry plant debris, creating space between shrubs and trees 100 feet from a house. Yeah, I'm reading that. I'm thinking, gosh, that sounds a lot like what is supposed to happen out in the forest, something that you've said for years.
Yeah, except that more than 30 feet is involved. But a lot of the so-called fireproofing of homes, unless it's got an irrigation system that can keep water on everything, unless it's got defensible space, it's a significant distance from trees or flammable, other flammable plants, flash fuels like grasses and stuff, it's still likely to burn. So that's a lot of busy work. It probably protects the percentage of people. But yes, that process of what they're doing needs to take place in the forest. This idea that the forests manage themselves or nature knows best is just nuts and has been disproven now for decades. We keep having these predicted fires with that type of approach, and yet those people have not relented. I think it's been just such a good source of income from the environmental law industry and
yes.
So much power by the environmental activists out of the urban areas that they're kind of addicted to it. So, but the results are burning up all the forests, and people are starting to catch on that this is not what they were promised.
Right. Well, you went right exactly where I went when I read that article, is that the left allows these crises to happen because they've allowed these bad managements of the forest to allow the debris to pile up. And then, gee, surprise, we have these matchsticks igniting. And now they have these organizations to solve the crisis, which they created. Except the difference is now they're getting paid to do what they should have been doing this whole time, a good forest management. And, you know, I guess it's nice that they finally saw common sense, but I just feel a little resentful that they're profiting from people's ignorance and from a problem that they created. I mean, how do you feel? What do you make of this?
Oh, I think it's you're exactly right. I don't know that they allowed this to occur. They created the situation. It was
yes.
Preventable. It was predictable. The situation happened. It got out of control 20 years ago in L.A., Eagle Creek Fire near Portland, Biscuit Fire, B&B, all of that happened. Whereas from 1952 to 1987, we had one major fire Oxbow fire in Western Oregon. Now we have 2 and 3 and 4 a year. And to throw in a bunch of government workers to solve the problem that government workers created is probably throwing good money after bad.
Yes. Well, they mentioned in that article two specific organizations. It sounds like they've got various chapters in cities, Fire Smart and Fire Wise. Do you know anything about those two organizations?
No, they sound like the type of organizations where somebody saw a way to make some money off of the situation. Right. It's kind of catchphrases, so at least they didn't take acronyms, but they sound more like a reactive type of organizations.
Well, they were very new to me. Reading that article, that was the first I'd heard of them, although I checked out Firewise on GuideStar. And their most recent 990 for an organization centered in Idaho had $200,000 in gross receipts. So I'm guessing they're going to be getting a lot more funding as the more fires continue here. This is, though, from an article that you had written. You said road access is the most critical consideration in the management of these properties, and it's also important regarding the management of future wildfires, floods, landslide, ice storms, snowstorms, windstorms, and their aftermath. Why do the environmentalists oppose road access so much?
Because scratch the surface and they oppose active management. They don't like logging. So you take away the roads and you can't log. Of course, then you can't manage wildfire. You can't salvage. Exactly. So it's a strategic maneuver. It'd be like tying your opponent's hand behind his back. It's just like, well, wait a minute. Why are you doing this? There's trails through this area for thousands of years. The roads follow the trails. Now we've got, by most standards, way too many people, maybe, but we all have to exist, and so we need to have efficient environment to do that in. And just to invent this mythical nature knows best, and let's create a wilderness and some buffer strips, and those animals need more of it, has just been a downward spiral. These fires aren't good for any of the things they claim they're that caused them.
Certainly not. Well, you'd think that they would want more people to be accessing the forest, because then they could appreciate them more and want to take care of them more. But, you know, the good news is, though, I think, or at least hope, is that at least they're getting it. In that same article, the Ashland Wildfire Chief was talking about the need for forest thinning followed by controlled burning. The problem is it's going to cost taxpayers $25 million rather than the taxpayer earning money from timber harvests and sales. But overall, do you think the tide is perhaps changing and that politicians are finally starting to come around?
I hope so. There's not a lot of evidence other than, like you say, a few words here and there. Some of the problems, like the Talent and Phoenix fire, that was caused by weeds along the Greenway. The Bear Creek had massive amounts of blackberries that formed the fuel that torched the trailer houses. It had massive amounts of aging trailer houses, 50-year-old trailer houses. But a lot of those houses are housing agricultural workers. They couldn't have kept that at no cost or hardly any cost. They could have put out goats. Yep. They could have put out mowing. They could have deducted a little bit from the rent or added a little bit to the rent. So they just watched that fuel build up right around the poor part of town. Well, and predictable wildfire occurred. But it wouldn't require massive amounts of money or anything else, just regular maintenance.
Well, regardless, you kind of touched on it earlier, I think people are starting to wake up. And so because people are waking up, eventually we hope the politicians will wake up, or we'll have to change them. Dr. Bob, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Yep, and politicians are people too, so they need to wake up.
Absolutely.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.
I'd like to welcome now Senator Dennis Linthicum, who represents SD 28 in Klamath Falls area. Since we last talked, he was also elected treasurer of the Oregon Republican Party, but he's also a businessman, rancher, irrigator, and former Klamath County Commissioner, which makes him uniquely qualified to discuss what's been happening in the Klamath region, which is dealing with drought and wildfires. Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. It's always a pleasure to chat with you guys, and I think these are good information segments for the public at large.
Absolutely. Got to learn what's happening there for sure. So there was a recent Statesman Journal article, and within this, they say that officials have formal reports of 117 empty wells, but suspect that more than 300 have gone dry in the past few weeks. Worried homeowners are facing waits of 6 months or more to get a new, deeper well dug because of the surging demand, leaving homes with no running water just a few months after the federal government had shut off irrigation to hundreds of the region's farmers for the first time ever. I mean, this is the Democrats doing this, shutting off water, taking away water rights for farmers who have been there for over 100 years. Are people in the area connecting the dots and see this as a problem with politics, not necessarily a fight with nature?
Well, you bring up a good point. It is a political fight. It is a federal and state water management issue, just like the forest management. Right 5 miles outside my front porch, we've got a 400,000-acre fire happening at the Bootleg Fire. And that is not because of global warming. That's because of poor land management, poor mm-hmm. forest management. And we are seeing the same thing in this water issue. Now, it is a big issue. There's groundwater. There's sustainable water issues. There's issues with regard to supply, which is what you just mentioned. The aquifer and the level and the amount of water that's getting drained from the aquifer. There's water quality and flood and drainage issues. All of these things are big issues, but they're big issues by watershed or by region. And the federal government, with the EPA and Endangered Species Act and all of these kinds of policies, is a one-size paintbrush that paints from the California coast all the way to North Carolina coast or up into Maine with the exact same paintbrush, exact same color. And we pretend that it's different, but it can't possibly be. It's federal law. And so water management in the Everglades is entirely different than water management in the Klamath Basin. And we need regional control much more than we need state control or federal control.
Yes.
And the 1,000 wells that are dry, that potentially 1,000 wells that are running dry, some of them are having problems with recharge rates, and some of them are actually having well depth problem because the aquifer is getting drained. Down in the southern Oregon area, it's getting drained on the other side of the Oregon-California border. Californians are taking water out of this very same aquifer with no holds barred. They just have their pumps running full time and they're draining water out of an aquifer. And quite frankly, the water doesn't know the boundary line between what's in state Oregon and what's in state California. And Californians can pump like crazy. And Oregonians suffer the consequences. So the problem really is a political problem. I hope everyone sees that and recognizes that the solution is to unleash free markets and let people use their water rights as appropriate.
Absolutely. You know, a big concern, you know, we've been following this for, gosh, going back to 2012 or more. One of my big concerns, and it's kind of echoed in this from a rancher, Judy Shanks, in that same Statesman Journal article, she said this: come December, if we don't get some storms in here and we don't see any changes, I'll probably have to sell everything because we can't hang on. And I have always believed, since we've been following this, that this is a manufactured crisis, and it's about stealing those farmers' land and reselling them as things like environmental mitigation credits. Without water, that land's useless, has no value agriculturally. So you could be forced to sell it for pennies on the dollar to an activist environmental group, which could then in turn sell it for mitigation credits in the tens of thousands of dollars per acre. And some places like Virginia, they were buying them for $50,000 an acre. Do you see that or something nefarious like that as a possibility? Or is this ongoing crisis just incompetence and unwillingness to tell the environmentalists to go bother some other area?
You raise a good question. Is it incompetence or is it purposeful? And nobody knows the heart of man except for God himself. And so that's a hard hammer to hit home. But I actually think you're on the right track. I think after you see incident after incident after incident, after a while, they're no longer coincidences. After a while, they start to paint a pattern. And humans are great at pattern recognition. And the pattern we recognize is the intrusive behavior of the authoritarian government types. The environmentalists pretend like they're trying to save the earth, and what they're really doing, even in the forest policy, we saw it with the sue and settle lawsuits, mm-hmm. and taxpayers end up funding their $600 an hour attorneys,
yes.
to sue to prevent us from harvesting timber. But lo and behold, nobody cares that we'd rather burn it up during the summertime. And it's a crying shame that people don't recognize the danger that happens. Again, they would not have standing. The lawyer in Chicago or the lawyer in San Francisco would not have standing on federal water issues or federal forest issues if those forests were state forests, or if that water was regulated to just the state water rights and organization. The reason the federal guys can bump in is because it's a lawsuit regarding the federal biological opinion with the short-nosed yep. sucker, yep. and all of a sudden that becomes the leverage that they use to essentially, like you're describing, potentially this is outright theft. This is taking by the government of your natural resource rights. And for example, this year, KID, the Klamath Irrigation District, is not delivering any water to thousands and thousands of farmers that they are obligated to serve. And earlier in the year, you'll remember there were lawsuits. First, a lawsuit against BOR, who was releasing water, several thousand feet. Well, let's see, it was a 1,500 cubic feet per second coming out of Link River. And that if we had kept that in the upper Klamath Lake, that water would be available for agriculture, but BOR released it downstream. It's now in the salty Pacific. It had no beneficial use
and they are doing that exact same thing in California, unfortunately. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Coming up next, when you're dealing with drought and need more energy, what's the left's grand idea? Pull out hydroelectric dams. We'll talk about that next with State Senator Dennis Lithcomb. And welcome back. This is the Ice Fire Radio Show. We're talking today to Senator Dennis Lithcomb, who represents SD28. That's down in the Klamath Falls area. They've been dealing with both drought and wildfires this year. And since we last talked, he was also elected treasurer of the Oregon Republican Party. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We're trying to get a handle on how to strengthen these conservative views. The Democrats have essentially gone far left, socialist or Marxist, whatever. And they're actually hard to categorize. Are they communists? Are they Marxists? Are they socialists? Are they just people who don't understand? And I think, again, this is a little bit like our last discussion. At some point, this is no longer coincidence. All of these issues that are coming to a head are coming to a head because it's an agenda.
Well, especially since these drought issues, okay, so Mother Nature can sometimes be cruel in terms of the amount of water she puts out, but it's not like we've never had drought before, and we have created means to capture water. We've created things like dams to create reservoirs, and in fact, we were talking during the break there that all of California's system was designed to mitigate five continuous years of severe drought. So basically, if they had gotten no water for 5 years, they had maintained enough water to meet the needs of the California people. And instead, they've just been flushing this water down the drain into the ocean to protect some Delta smelt, which they can't even find them most years. So we have been wasting millions of acre feet support basically an endangered, non-existent fish. To me, people always come first over some fish. I'm sorry. There's plenty of fish in the ocean. I think farmers always need to come first. So the Democrats in Congress are going full steam ahead. Speaking of dams, they want to pull out some hydroelectric dams down in the Klamath Basin. what are they going to do to replace the electricity those dams generate?
Well, let's just back up and set the stage a little bit for your listeners. You know, you're right with regard to the five-year periods of droughts. There was drought in the 1976-1977 range. There was a drought between 87 and 92. There was a drought in the 01. Everybody in the Klamath Basin recognizes that 2007 to 09 was a drought, 2012 through 2015 was a drought. We're now in a continuation of our third year of drought here, 18, 19, 20, and 21. And these low volume water arenas are where reservoirs, dams, and water management becomes one of the most important facets of managing water for the human populations and agriculture. How is it that anybody can make a case that we could blow those dams and all be better off because the river would be running its natural and pristine prehistoric at its prehistoric pace? Right now, just before the break, I was complaining that the BOR was releasing water and KID sued the BOR, and the OWRD, Oregon Water Resource Department, is supposed to be enforcing state water law, even for the Bureau of Reclamation, and they wouldn't do it. So there was another lawsuit. Contempt of court was issued from the court, and OWRD Water Resources still never enforced the law. And there would not be any place for the Link River to store water, quote one, or release water, quote two, if you blow that dam. That would be at the Link River area. The same holds for the J.C. Boyle Dam. The same holds for COPCO 1 and COPCO 2. All of these dams within this system are there to regulate water. They provide the public with recreation. They provide a uniform stream of downstream water for fish and wildlife, and they also provide, as you started this question, with electricity. And the question is, where would we get that electricity from, and how would we power all of those electric vehicles, and how will we come to net zero by 2040 if we blow hydro, which is now considered a renewable resource? Up until this legislative session, it was not considered a renewable resource. And that should put the red flag on everybody's mind that this is public policy failure. This is not drought-driven exclusive farm problem. This is a policy problem.
Well, absolutely. And a big part of this that they want to pull these dams out for is for salmon and other fish. The great thing about capitalism, it's you don't have to have an either or. So why not simply just design better fish ladders so you can save the fish and have water for irrigation and generate electricity while you're at it? I mean, why do we fall prey to this either or mentality? Why not have it all?
Right. I agree with you. We should be improving that physical infrastructure, not destroying it.
Yes.
Think about the dams that went in. For our entire lifetime, really, dam infrastructure has gone into place to provide flood control, to move and share water resources, to allow science and data technology to review and understand what's going on in the stream flow. And here we're going to detonate all of that and let all of that rubble flow downstream. And if you've ever seen a picture of the Klamath River where it meets the Pacific, there's no room down there for any debris to accumulate without blocking the entire thing, because it's been this resource has been there for thousands of years, and we're pretending that our human wisdom, our prudence, our technology isn't worth squat, and we'd rather just blow it up and flush it down the tubes. And I think we're in a really dangerous position if people can keep thinking we can save the world by exiting on a stretcher. You cannot get out of, at one point the only way off this planet is through the grave and out the other side to heaven's gate. But that doesn't mean we neglect our children and our grandchildren for some dreamy idea that's poorly thought out and terribly executed.
Absolutely.
We should actually be thinking more prudently about our future and our children's future and our grandchildren's future.
Absolutely. And plus, the danger here with pulling out these dams, which we had covered about a decade ago, was that this was the Petri dish. We had somebody that was inside one of those meetings, and they were saying that the goal of pulling out the dams in the Klamath Basin was to create the legislative and policy process to pull out all of the dams. That includes the Columbia Snake and 13-some dams across Oregon that they want to pull out. This is absolutely crazy. Everyone stay with us. We'll wrap things up with Senator Dennis Lithcomb coming up. We'll be talking about some solutions. And we're back in our final segment now on the iSpire Radio Show. We're talking today to Senator Dennis Lithcomb. He represents SD28 down in the Klamath Falls area, which has been dealing with both drought and wildfires this year. And so, Dennis, in the time that we have left, there have been water problems in the Klamath since basically forever. Why isn't this problem ever solved? Are there no solutions, or is it just purely political?
I think it's purely political. We should get a handle on the idea that the authoritarian, is not the right answer. These people are not scientists. They are not students of this specific polity. For example, the governor cannot possibly organize forestry management, mask mandates, vaccine mandates, and watershed studies for the Klamath Basin at the same time. She's not capable of that kind of authority and understanding of all those complex issues. So that's the fundamental problem, and we have to get the public and the voter bloc away from thinking one man's going to save us, whether that be Trump or who's the current president. We can't get in that mindset. We have to think in terms of local partnerships and understanding. Let's go to the KIDBOR Water Resource District responsibilities. If they had really been in a partnership arrangement, a collaborative opportunity for cooperating among agencies and water users, then when the irrigation district and all of their associated thousands of acres of farm make a petition to BOR, Bureau of Reclamation, to stop putting fresh water into the salty Pacific, there would have been opportunity for conversation. Sure. And then the Oregon Water Resources Department could have helped enforce that or come up with alternative measurements, streamline guidance, gauges for water flow, et cetera. They could have come up with all kinds of opportunities for that, quote, cooperation. We don't have cooperation. This is purely a political onslaught against farmers and agricultures and rural Oregonians who don't vote like the leftists who live in downtown Portland or San Francisco. And they, quite frankly, have more of a say in policy than the individuals who live in my community and my district. It's a crying shame. And so part of the problem is the public has been schnookered, or they've been taken hostage by these policies that are completely irreconcilable. And it's about time we just said enough is enough, and we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Well, I certainly hope so. And it's not like there aren't solutions out there. For example, this critical water shortage, they have shut off the water to 200,000 acres of farmland for two species of endangered suckerfish in a lake. So why not just build a giant aquarium for those fish, or wall off a portion of that lake and turn it into a fish farm so that those fish can thrive? But with an aquarium, it can be a closed system. You don't even need water from that lake. Just get enough water, run it through filters. I mean, we do that all the time. Why not have that as a solution and instead use that water for those farmers to keep those farms alive down there?
Well, and, you know, with regard to those sucker fish, you know, that currently there's a taxpayer paid for growth and proper population replacement agenda. But what we see is we see that those fish actually don't survive well in the high lake water environments that we're pretending to keep just for their benefit. And they actually survive better in the fluctuating environment that has been all of human history, because all of human history has had spells of drought, spells of wet years, La Niñas, El Niños, and all of those kinds of things. And it turns out the man-made one-size-fits-all doesn't actually fit anybody at all, and it's a bad policy, and it's impacting the fish as well.
Well, if you were in charge down there, what are some solutions that you would put forward?
Well, there's some key things that we need to understand is we've been using God's blessing of snowpack to store water for decades and decades and decades. And if we are in a global warming phase, whether it's man-caused or not, I don't think it's man-caused. I think it's just a natural cyclical nature, part of the natural environment. And we're not storing water in the snowpack any longer, then we should be either creating reservoirs which have evaporation problems, you know, because there's a lot of surface water, sure, which evaporates a lot of water out of a surface reservoir. Offstream reservoirs all suffer from that problem, but we could also be recharging the water in the Klamath Basin. And then we need a strong leadership to say, wait a minute, if we recharge the water in that aquifer, is the state of California and the gigantic wells they have just south of the border at Malin, Merrill area, are those Californians going to be stealing all of our water? And so we need an interstate relationship to say, look it, we put this much water into there, you're not allowed to take it out.
Right.
And that's kind of flexibility at the water management level is important, as well as a partnership across state lines.
Exactly. And the thing is, there are solutions. We just have to have the will to do it. Dennis, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Well, good. I always appreciate time to chat with you guys, and I look forward to another session.
Sounds great. We look forward to that as well. It's not that there aren't answers. It's that there are answers that would solve the problems, but they would stop the continual money flow into left-wing environmentalist organizations that elect left-wing politicians who have a vested interest in never-ending environmental problems that environmental organizations get paid to pretend to fix, but whose actual function is to re-elect Democrats. It's time to stop being silent. Our fellow Oregonians in these rural areas are under attack, and the rest of us need to stand up. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.